Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Josh Brown.
How are you doing?
Hiya. Not too bad. We thought we'd do a whole podcast on the idea of choices in games, which kind of branches out into a whole bunch of other stuff. We've got talking points like how much different choices in games affect canon, how much it affects the replayability of something, looking at replayability statistics, showing that most people don't even replay games in the first place. So it's like the whole idea of multiple ways to play through something hardly ever gets capitalized on the fan side or the player side. But I was going to pass this over to Benroy because this was your idea to focus on. I think it came from finishing Soulstorm.
Yeah, so as I say, follow me, and you'll follow me in this in the Spiro of Abe. Finished that game last night, even though I didn't really get the finish trophy because I got not the worst ending. At this point, if you didn't realize, the Abe franchise has had multiple endings in a few games for decades now, right? And yeah. I got the second worst ending in that game, and it was kind of like I didn't realize it was happening until it started washing over me, because I just done the most rancid section of like defending this thing and then like being zapped and just frustration for the past hour trying to get it done. Mm-hmm. And the cutscene sort of washed through me over me, and then a couple of characters horribly just went, you're gone now, mate, you're gone, dead. And you're like, what? And then just that's nothing, no credits, nothing, just straight back to the menu, just Abe looking at me on the menu, just like with a sad face. That just went down. And can I go back? And if I go back, do I have to do that horrible last bit of that level again? So mm-hmm. I don't know. So now I'm going to go back, like, to get the terrain, the true experience of that game, I've got to go back and do the, get some of the karma up, because I've got a few, like, you've got to get like 12 out of all the levels good karma, and I've got eight or nine,
because I finished levels where it's been like negative karma or zero karma being like the statistic that's based on how many of the mudikins, the fellow of your species that you saved. I've like missed entire paths and it said like, oh, that's zero karma, therefore this thing is doomed. And I'm like, well, I don't even know where I was supposed to go to find that, and I'm never going to go back and do it again just because the levels are like that awkward.
I'm always well up for saving them, and then something happens midway through the level where it's like you've got this this power to take over the sligs, but it's just so awkward, and you've got so many of these things that stop you from doing it, to the point where they might as well just say you must do this one specific thing here to get through, or you're not getting mm-hmm. through. And that sometimes towards the like every level I feel like it's so like well designed and looks lush, and then they normally like throw a spanner in there and like really like mess it up for a lot of it, like
to the point where it just feels like you're like suffering through it and you'll never do it again.
I just want to be done with it. And then now that this is like, most levels have that, I'm like, you were doing so well and it just fell apart here. It's just me being crap, but like I feel like me being well keen and into this franchise, being dying for this game, and then for it to sort of like almost every level stab me in the side again.
It's weird because we said last week, and I mostly stick by this, like the Soulstorm is this like deliberate throwback to PS1 difficulty of PS1 level design. Yeah. It is very like the originals. But there is a point where, like, especially with some of the boss encounters, like there's a specific turret boss fight about a quarter, maybe a third of the way through, that is just really weird and specific. You got to stand in this exact place to throw something, and it's all really awkward. And at some point there's like a pivot in that game where it just gets old school annoying. And it's just, I remember when I was younger, me and my friends always had this this thing where, you know, we would designate certain levels as like, I'm just glad I got through that. I'm never going to play that again. And those are, you know, like I suffered through that thing. I played it once, and that's that one level is the reason I will not go back through it again. Like, I've never played Dark Souls more than once because I refuse to fight Ornstein and Smough again. I know that's more of a boss fight, but like, still, I don't know if you guys have that where it comes to like the idea of replayability. Because I Googled like some replayability statistics. Like, it seems like most people don't replay games. Like, even, you know, completion stats on Red Dead 2, GTA 3, Skyrim from PSN profiles showed that their completion is still less than 30% anyway. Like, do you guys think of like, is replayability even like an active thing? Or is it just like get through something and you're done?
It used to be when I was younger growing up, you know, and I had fewer games to play. Like, I was really well into getting the games that I could replay. So I would gravitate towards things with alternate endings or branching pathways because going through it, it made me excited. You know, even going through Gears of War 1, where you literally just chose whether you wanted to go on the high ground or the low ground. Like, to me, that was like, that's amazing, because now I have an excuse to go back through the game and I have something slightly different to see. It didn't add too much, but it was a little bit extra and a bit of an incentive to go back to it. So when, you know, I didn't have another game to play and I just had Gears looking at me, I was like, well, at least there's something new in there for me to experience. And I partly think it's why I played Mass Effect 1 so much. Like, I've talked before about how I bought that game like 8 times because I just I loved it, but also I wanted to see like the different permutations, wanted to do conversations differently, have different dynamics with the characters. So for me, it was more when I was younger and games didn't feel as big. Nowadays, you know, I'm starting to sound like an old man here. Nowadays, we have games that are like huge, right? We have like 100-hour games coming out seemingly every other month, and it's a lot.
I can't imagine anyone replaying Red Dead 2. That seems totally massive.
I admittedly, I did replay Red Dead 2, but that was an exception because I love that game. But The Witcher, for instance, The Witcher 3, one of my favorite games of all time. It took me 5 years to get around to replaying it. And
it
took better than 5 years to play it. So, you know, originally most of those alternate choices were just kind of lost to me. There was something I looked up and something I didn't appreciate until the second time around when I finally justified it. So as I've gotten older personally, replayability has kind of gotten less of an issue, and I'll find myself just looking things up on the internet after the fact. But I do know that, you know, when I had less choice and when games weren't as big, it was much more of a thing that was on my mind.
Because I'm going to throw something out there that we talked about this before we started recording, but like, I don't know how much this is a just me thing or whether it's a widely talked about thing, but like, when you're playing a game and you're in game and you're going down a certain pathway and the level branches into like multiple different ways, I hate that. Because I always like, you have to commit to one of them. So I sort of like start ambling down one side. Okay, does this look like it's the main path? Like, oh, this kind of seems like that's like an, or maybe a boss fight down there. Like, oh, that kind of seems like that. Then I go back to the branching bit and I go the other way. Oh, kind of seems like maybe this is the way. And I hate that. I go back and forth. I have to commit to one of them. And sometimes there's a cutscene there. There is a boss there. And I get annoyed because I've missed whatever that little separate thing was that I should have done before I went down the main path. That always really, really annoys me, but I don't know if that's like a common thing or not.
This sounds like those early levels in like the Crash Bandicoot games with a sort of branch. That just sounds like me, like, especially on the dark ones. Like, do I go that way? No, I go back the other way.
Yeah.
For me, it's never been so much. I don't mind the branching path stuff. It's always the narrative sort of aspects to it. Like, again, what I mentioned with Abe, like, I should have known at a certain point, you're just screwed unless you go back and play some of those older levels. Whereas like, me and you both went through Catherine at one point.
All three of us have played it now.
The 100 years ago when we were playing the new edition of it. And somehow, because Zoe used the word with us, she knew what we were doing, what path we were going down. And I was going down, I was going to have like the worst in it. But somehow I managed to just go, whoop! And at the end, like, save myself. And she couldn't believe it. And you also got the good, nice ending, didn't you? Somehow.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of game that I would never replay, because I remember there's a whole, that's the whole other side of it as well, is like what David Cage said when Heavy Rain came out. And I forget the exact place he said this, but he made this comment that like, as Ethan, the character, when you go down the stairs at the beginning as that character, you can go to the fridge and you can drink some orange juice out the fridge. And his whole point was, your version of that character drank that orange juice on that morning, and that was your playthrough, and that's the one that you need to live with. And whatever happens in that game, whatever choices you make, that's how he wanted that game to be played. He's like, you shouldn't replay it, you shouldn't save scum or anything like that. And I think like, there's, we can get back to the branching path thing too, but like, that's a whole, in Heavy Rain's case, in David Cage's games, I've lived with those decisions. Like, I'm just like, that is my version of Heavy Rain. You know, in my version of Heavy Rain, the killer got away, I didn't finish it, etc. I didn't capture him and stuff. And I've kind of lived with it that way. But when it's more of an action-based game, there's something in there about not seeing the full product that always really annoys me.
something like what you just mentioned there about like the whole David Cage thing, that's something that's been on my mind for a while, and I'm really interested to see what you guys think about it, because I remember playing through Telltale's The Walking Dead for the first time, right? And, you know, that whole game was built around your choices will impact this narrative. You can impact it in massive ways. You can decide who lives, who dies and stuff. And you get to the end and you realize that is true, but a lot of it is an illusion. A lot of it is just kind of like, you know, the illusion of choice. And then you're going to ultimately the same or similar place as everyone else. And I remember going on the forums at the time, this is like, what, back in 2010? And people were like annoyed. People were like, there is not enough agency in this. This is an illusion. And I remember kind of buying into that at the time and thinking that was a knock on the game. But the older I've got, the more, and it sounds very cliche to say, the more I've appreciated the journey rather than the plot point, rather than like the end result of the plot. And I feel like it is perhaps a little bit reductive to say, well, these choices are an illusion. You don't really impact the story, because you do. Everything you're doing in those games, every decision you're making and how you present the character or the lines of dialogue that you choose, even if they're not changing the plot fundamentally, you're still changing how you as a person relate to the character and what you invest in the game. And I've just found that much more rewarding as time goes on to kind of like appreciate that, yeah, these games probably aren't going to have these massive branching pathways. And when they do, that's cool, but they don't really need to just, you know, only function to, you know, change the course of an entire narrative. Just little changes can add a lot of flavor and can add a lot of characterization that does make your playthrough legitimately different from someone else's. Like, we've been playing through Disco Elysium, you know, and ultimately that's the same detective story. You know, we're both, we might fail at different parts. We might not get, you know, the full story or something, but we're on the same
completely different. Path.
We might look completely different, but it is in those like small little differences that I think it shouldn't be overlooked, you know, because they're still impactful, even if they are an illusion, because ultimately video games are an illusion from top to bottom. You know, it's an illusion of agency. Even in the biggest RPG, it's still the script writers, it's still the game directors, it's still the level designers who have that final say and that final control, and you're just playing around in their world, if that makes sense.
That the Telltale thing, that I remember when that was the case back in 2012, that like someone, whoever finished it first, it was a whole big talking point that, oh my God, it's not actually branching the story like massively. It's just, you know, it pops up and says X character will remember this or this will impact this. And by the time you got to the end, you realized that we were all served up ostensibly the same ending. I didn't care and I still don't care, because it was convincing enough where I believed I was like, I had agency in that world. And it felt like I still got the full package. I guess it's almost genre dependent. The more I start talking about it, what I'm talking, the thing that I was describing before about the multiple pathways, that's literal physical spaces I'm moving down. And I like, you know, I'm cutting one thing off because I'm choosing something else. And it doesn't have that Cagean overlay feel of like, these choices are the intentional part in, I don't know, when I'm playing an action game and I pick a specific path, I feel like I'm missing something, as opposed to like, it's hard to like play it in a way where I get to actually see everything.
That game was the breaking point for me in that sort of like the illusion of choice, where I really enjoyed that game and everything. But ever since then, I've been like, well, if I can pick if someone lives or dies, they're going to become inconsequential and get less and less right and have less and less to do until they're just going to be murked off anyway.
Yeah.
So I feel like when it comes to saving people and like, I very specifically, and this is like, say, where you've had to make choices in like, say, some of the latest gear stuff or Resident Evil 7, like you can see that they have a one arching path for them. But like with The Walking Dead, with certain characters, when you get to save them, like they're not the A tier with Lee Everett and Clementine Everett, so they're eventually just going to like get more diluted away into the point where they're just in the background, and then to the point where they die anyway. I mean, that's the sort of story of The Walking Dead, where a lot of people die, and I get that. But for me, it just sort of like brought it down. Like, not so, like with Until Dawn to like a lesser extent, like I can't remember her name at the very beginning, who the
character who dies at the very beginning.
She's just really hard to save. And then when you say she gets pulled like through the door or whatever it is when you're flirting, and after you save her, you do a lot she's just sort of like there for the rest of the game and not doesn't really do anything.
It's almost like she wasn't supposed to be there.
Yeah, and then you've got like, say, like Wolfenstein, like I saved the Scottish guy, so I never got to meet Jimi Hendrix, because
neither did I.
If you save the young guy, then you do this whole thing where Jimi Hendrix is there in that world and playing the guitar and stuff like that, and like in your home or something like that. So
Josh Brown, is this a real thing?
I have wondered if I've entered a dream world right now, because I can't remember this
Jimi Hendrix is in one of the Wolfenstein 2, one or two of the newer ones, and depending on if you save the Scottish guy, you don't get him because he doesn't.
Which I did because he's a better character.
Which he's a better character, but if you save the young guy, who's a bit more of a hick sort of tone to his voice, then you get to this whole thing with Jimi Hendrix is just hanging out with all you for a bit, yeah.
We should spin that out into like talking about canon and the idea of like when you're presented with a choice in a game, because that's the thing at the end of Gears 5, you're picking between Del or JD or whatever. And in the moment, I don't know if you guys had that same feeling, like I said, where you're sort of second guessing what it's actually gonna do. Like it's like, well, one of these is gonna be canon, one of them's not, and is it gonna be the case where the developers are just gonna look at the player data and be like, well, I guess this dictates the story or whatever.
Because that was weird, because I saved the one who my friend was playing as, which was Del.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So almost the narrative concerns almost didn't make a first wave over me. And then after the consequences, seconds later, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll have a moment to speak to them. And they just get put in the bin and everything else around you is collapsing. Like, oh,
For Marcus. So I was just like, I can't leave Marcus without his son. So it's going to have to be, Del's going to have to get it, but...
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Like, but again, like going forward, they have two versions of the future, the rest of that story.
If my friend wasn't playing, if I was playing alone, I probably would have saved. It's weird because you spend so much of that game with Del, but then like say swerving and come back to like in the Resident Evil one where it's either Mia or Zoe. But I'm like, well, Ethan would save his wife, right? Like Ethan would save the person he's come for, and then like all that happens. But yeah, to the gear stuff, it was the narrative thing didn't even hit me until afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I think me and Josh did Del. Is that right? And you did JD? If I remember, Josh, did you save Del?
I think so. I think I said Del. Yeah. Ultimately, I thought
Marcus hasn't got his little son.
But that's what I was thinking, Scott, in my head, right? It's mad how Gears 5's choice in particular makes you think about the machinations of video game design. Because like Roy was saying earlier, I think everyone has that point where they fully buy in to the idea that your choices are going to matter across an entire franchise. For me, it was Mass Effect. Playing Mass Effect 1, I fully bought in to the promise that everything I did was going to have massive impacts on future games. And then you get those future games and you realize that ultimately it just amounts to getting an email from a character that you saved or all the characters that you did save getting written out because, like Roy said, it's too much work to try and factor in all those variables to scripts because that is so much work. So, you know, once you learn that lesson and once you kind of become aware of the realities of video game design and how hard and how massive it is to pull that off, when I got to that point in Gears 5, I was literally taken out of the story and I was thinking about how the next game could play. And I was thinking, in this situation, if I save Del, I was like, I love Del as a character as well. Like Roy said, we've spent a lot of time with him during that game, but also I can maybe set up a future storyline where Marcus has to deal with the death of his son. And I was like, that's quite interesting dramatically. Maybe that will pay off. So I was almost thinking like I was a writer, or like I was a game designer of a potential Gear 6 and thinking about what the juiciest result would be. But then also in the back of my mind, I was also thinking they're either going to have to make one of these canon or they're going to have to write around it in a way in Gear 6 where they give whoever survives a minimized role. Yeah. And that's kind of like what I was wondering. I'm pretty sure when we did our podcast on it, as soon as we all finished it, that's what I said then. I was like, I worry about Gear 6 now because I genuinely love the story of Gears 5 and how it invested me in these characters that I couldn't give a crap about in Gears 4, but suddenly was really interested in. And now I'm like, have they put this choice in there and now will it write them into, you know, circles going forward?
I think they're safe with that choice specifically because the body falls into a pit and I feel that body is just going to be a monster for you to fight in the next game. So I feel like whatever
maybe
one
you
they
still
can...
rest, you go and save him, I guess.
So I reckon either way they'll be in the game, but you get to fight them. So I feel like that if they do make you can either have both, that's a way they can get around it. But yeah, like it's as you said, it's very close to like, well, if they don't commit fully, then the character's just going to be watered down to nothing. And I didn't want that from either of those characters, especially in like a franchise where like, I want them to, as Scott said earlier, I want them to serve me the dinner and I want them to choose what's going on. I don't want to have to like sort of pick a mix.
Well, so this is the wider thing. It's like, do choices, branching narratives, do they serve an overall positive in video games? Because I was thinking back on like the big fad that was across the 2000s, like moral choices in video games was a big old thing across the 2000s, to the point where even GTA 4 had tons of just binary choices, like, do you want to do this or do you want to do that? And obviously QuickTime events kind of went alongside it. And like, are you going to push the button in time to save the character or is this thing going to happen? And I feel like, you know, all that stuff's kind of like played itself out. So like, that's the crux of it for me is like, I want a artist, a creative or whatever to serve me a specific story, a certain set of mechanics or whatever. And depending on genre, that comes through with different degrees of confidence or different degrees of execution. Like if it's, like I said, if it's an action game and it's multiple corridors, then I'm just going to do an awkward stumble around until I figure out where I'm supposed to, quote unquote, supposed to go. But if the actual intent is David Cage and the intent is to give you 20 different things and what do you like Disco Elysium, then it's like, well, you know, how do you mold this character? Then all of that is the intent and it doesn't feel as awkward. But I don't know if that's a weird internal battle that only I'm doing every time I play one of these games.
No, I think you're right, man. I think that, like, to an extent, it depends on the game, it depends on the execution, it depends on the intent behind it. Like, I think there was a fad where suddenly player choice was such a thing, and like throwing in branching pathways, throwing in these binary choices between good and evil moral decisions, like they were almost an afterthought, and then it wasn't really engaging. You know, I really like Infamous, but I always thought the choices there were kind of like quite cut and dry, a little bit basic, not really nuanced. And they're funny enough as like a gimmick, but they're not something I can invest in. But when a choice is done well, I do think it gives like gaming as a medium an element that you can't get from many other artistic kind of endeavors, you know, the fact that these different choices, these different outcomes can be as well written as the other, I don't think it, you know, invalidates one being the proper one or anything like that, because they're all as strong as each other, and it doesn't really matter what the director intends to be canon or whatever at that point. It's whatever you bring to it, however you've molded that journey. In a way, it's kind of as much yours as it is, you know, the developers who have crafted it, because you've put so much of yourself into it, you've pushed it in a certain direction. Of course, yeah, they're the overall architects. But at the same time, I think that is just as valuable as, you know, a Naughty Dog game where it's like, this is the narrative, you can't change it, here you go, you know.
I feel like I think that's why like Last of Us was so impactful, because they forced you you have to kill the head surgeon in Last of Us 1. You can spare the other two if you want, but the fact that they forced you into that mold, like, that helped make Last of Us's story get infinitely more elevated than GTA 4's story, for example.
But then, like, say, where I feel like the choice does work is like Ghost of Tsushima, where you make that character your own, and then like towards the end, I won't say the choice, but I really liked the idea of that choice and what am I going to do with that certain character that have had a complicated relationship with, and there's one choice that I made that's the game I'd like to see, and the other one, like, I wouldn't be as interested in the narrative if I went down that way. But whereas like that was a choice I was so interested in, I think, because maybe it's the first game, and because it has that open world malaise where you become that character and you're going around chasing foxes and all that. But I don't know, what do you two think about that choice compared to the other ones? Like,
kind of like the Gears one, because it's like, as an actual choice, like as an actual way that game
I was ended, more I mean, into it. I was more into choosing in that world than I was into Gears. I wanted to choose for me in Gears.
Right. The way that Tsushima wraps up for me gave me all the same feelings as The Last of Us 2, where I was that invested in that entire world, story, character, like everything. So I was just like, oh my God, this is heart-wrenching. And so, for me, there's one way that story goes that feels like it's what they've been building towards the entire run. But I guess you could do the other one. To flip it on its head, like, would you have wanted a choice at the end of Last of Us 2? Like, no. To me neither. Based on how much I like Last of Us 1, but it's like, do you think that story would have been gone down totally differently if you had the choice to spare Abby at the end or kill Abby at the end?
I think like The Last of Us and The Last of Us 2 are good arguments for why certain things do need to be authored and taken away out of the player's control to like be put on a story, because, you know, the first one, especially when you kill that surgeon, like you said, it's so impactful because you think you're going to get a choice because this is video games and surely you have control of this character. Surely this character is an extension of you. And then Naughty Dog confirms that, no, this character's Joel. You've just been, you know, you just had the luxury of being in his shoes for 12 hours or whatever, and he's going to do it and he's going to make you do it. You know, but at the same time, I do agree with Benroy that the end of Ghost of Tsushima, I thought that choice was so effective, and I remember like it happening and having to put my phone down and just like racking my controller down, putting my controller down, picking up my phone to, you know, have a bit of a research to be like, what have other people done? Like, what should
really,
I do? Like, what's going
in the,
on
in the moment?
I had to, because I was that taken back by it that I couldn't commit to it. I was genuinely too anxious about it. That I was scared. I needed to know, like, I needed a bit of comfort blanket. I needed to like almost go to like a support group and be like, what did you do? Talk me through this decision. Cause I thought it was like that powerful to the point where, it still would have been a great ending if it railroaded you down one over the other. But the fact that, you know, it gave you that choice in that moment, I think it's just, you know, having confidence in either the story you've written or having confidence in the mechanics of games and how to make game stories unique. To make your own judgment call. You know, The Last of Us would have been worse if you had a choice at the end. Ghost of Tsushima might have been worse if you didn't have the choice, you know? So Tsushima's, I think, it's always case by case.
Yeah, Tsushima's a perfect middle ground, because I am glad that choice was there. It's just that one of them made thematic sense as a through line, I felt, than like the other one. And especially if we're talking about canon or sequels and stuff like that, then it's like, it'll sort of make sense if we're going to be doing like continuing that story forward. But also there was one thing I was going to like posit in the middle of all this stuff as well, is like, how much do you guys save scum when it comes to like, oh my God, that thing went wrong, let me reload, let me try that again. Because I didn't do any of that in Disco Elysium until towards the end when some big old things started happening. And I was like, oh, that's an insane thing. Let me just reload and have that conversation again and see if I can steer that in a different direction.
Let me just tell you that I do not play XCOM or any game like that without making sure everyone survives the entire time. And we've all had 100 battles together and everyone's fine. I am not losing anyone. at that point.
Which apparently is not, some of the purists would say that's not the way to play. Not necessarily, I mean, but I can
then
see
I'll block them and then I never hear it again. But like, for me, I can't like have the idea of them working someone up. And I form little narratives in my head, and you can give them their names, and you can give them appearances. And for me, like, yeah, for an XCOM, at least anyway, I'm not so sure. Like, I haven't played Disco yet, but like, I can't have anyone die. And they're going to have to stay around to the end, I'm afraid.
Right. Josh, are you indulging a bit of the old save scumming?
I used to more than I do now. I used to save scum all the time. Like, I would do every single game, make sure I had quick saves. So if anything went wrong, anything went tits up, I could just go back, make sure that character didn't die, make sure I got the best possible outcome. But now I've gotten older, and I suppose I'm enjoying the faults in games as much as I am my successes. Like when I was playing Disco, I was trying not to save scum, and I did once or twice, but not on the key things. They were just like kind of throwaway dice rolls on the.
I was
going to
say, I only did mine because it was like a 70% chance that it should have worked, and it didn't. So I was like, no, screw you, that should have gone through or whatever. So I restarted it. But then, I tried the other one, and then that didn't work either. So I went back to how it should have gone the first time, because I was like, no, that is. I'm always going to be like, however the dice lay sort of thing is how it should go.
Yeah, I was just going to say I got a lot of people killed in Disco League, and I think ultimately it just made for a perhaps more engaging situation than if I save scummed in the moment and saved them all. You know, because I felt like, you know, there are real losses now. There are real consequences to my actions. And it made me contemplate on the previous things that I'd done and how I could have done them better. And I thought, that's interesting. That's an interesting piece of reflection that I might not have had if I just went, nah, load it back up, get the dice roll, win.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I've never trusted games since playing L.A. Noire and Cole Phelps. Just basically, one option is, oh, you're right. The other option is launch nukes at every country in the world. So I just sort of like, especially with like The Witcher 3, where I was like, well, this is my first playthrough. I don't want to play this again for probably half a decade to a decade. And I want to have like some sort of like decent experience at the end. So it's like, I was trying to like breadcrumb myself and save when I thought like, is this character good? And I'd still lost a few characters, and I didn't go into the final sort of battle with everyone, but I had a satisfying time. And I feel like if I had no one but the key core group in that last sort of battle there, I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. It wouldn't have felt like a more of like a bringing everyone together sort of thing, if you know what I mean.
I will say I like when a game pulls the whole like, oh, actually we've been tracking you this entire time thing, and you get like, that's obviously Witcher 3 at the end, it's like an Undertale, things like that, where it's like, oh no, actually everything you did led to this, and that's they sort of retroactively reveal that there were choices along the way, but you maybe didn't realize as much.
Yeah, Prey's also just got some mad endings. You're like, what? And like, Prey, one of the, that was it, 2017? It's one of the best games of the year that no one played.
Yeah,
true.
This is all just passive aggressive argument for you to.
I'll tell you what, mate, it's got the old FPS boost. You can play it in a 60 or 120, got the HDR on. I've re-downloaded it. It's sitting in the library. I
tell you what, you know, you were talking about there, Roy, about like how you just sometimes don't have time to finish. Or if you finish a game, you know you're not going to play it. You just want the best possible outcome. And I do that when I feel like the story isn't like important, or I feel like I don't have much sway over it. Like, for instance, when I was playing Bloodborne, you need to get the three umbilical cords to get the final boss, and I remember finding that out beforehand, and I was thinking, thank God
I saved scum that to hell.
Yeah, because if I played that game, completed it, then found out there was a boss that I missed because I missed eating an umbilical cord,
that's
along the
entirely
way.
Me and I just thought, no, I'm never doing that. I'm not going to replay that whole game to find three umbilical cords. No,
yeah, totally. And it's like, it's kind of cool that it's there, but I just know me and my gaming habits that I just wouldn't have done it. Not for that. I would have ended up looking it up. So
didn't you do that? You did Sekiro's crazy ending as well, didn't you?
I think so. I think
you had to go and find, maybe it was Jules. You had to go find like 12 items to trigger like the true ending. There's three endings to Sekiro.
I will have, because same bread and butter, you know.
Uh-huh. I got the true ending in Sekiro. It was called lend it to Zoe and then never get it back, and then now I don't have to play it ever again sort of thing. I'm just free of that game. It's gone. But yeah, Bloodborne, I uploaded my saves to the cloud and make sure I could see those other endings and sort of feel like, I don't know if that's cheating. At the same time, like, I had much more time back then, but I just wanted to see what was going on. So, you know.
Like I said, it's like an ultimate thing. It's like, did it feel worthwhile going back through it, doing those extra things? Or did that feel like, it should have been one shot straight through kind of thing?
Yeah, and bringing it like all the way back to Abe, I'm going to do those extra levels to get the karma up, because there's two more levels after the bad ending. So like there's two levels of content that I've not seen in this game. I'm not paid for it, it's PS Plus, but you know, I want to see nice, happy time, at least in that world. I want everyone to be a bit happy at the end, imagine just, it just feels like a Negan moment when bam, and just, you want to die really horribly.
I think ultimately to bring it all full circle, like the choices can't, like obviously choices in video games do elevate them as like a medium. There are examples, like even the retroactive, like choice tracking based stuff that makes games go down in history, like The Witcher and stuff. For me, it's always going to be that all that stuff is fine. I agree with all that stuff. Ghost of Tsushima, as well as like a middle ground, Last of Us being another example of when they like sort of the illusion of choice, but it did go that way. But I think that, I don't know, I'd kind of like throw it down in the comments. Like, is it like based on genre, do choices stand out as being more of a negative? Or do you just want the game to be like, get the full package the whole time, first time through? For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
I'm going to say goodbye.
You can say goodbye. And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.